Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards, I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eyes Look at the Week in Review. Okay, J.R., there was a lot of fun with this transportation funding thing.
Yeah.
WisPolitics, you guys, hosted a luncheon with Speaker Voss.
Yes.
And he talked about playing cards against the governor. He was very, very candid.
Yes.
Thank you for letting us use the footage. The entire show will be up on Wisconsin Eye on Monday. Let's just hear about him playing cards with the governor. Let's listen to a video clip from Speaker Voss, and then JR and I will talk about it.
Would you please raise my gas taxes so I can help pay for the roads?
Well, probably not. So how about that? So the example that I have often used, which I think is still true today, if you are a card player, I have a pair of twos, the governor has a straight, and I have to draw three of a kind to win. Now, it's not impossible, but I wouldn't bet on me.
He has the power. I mean, I have a more difficult job than Governor Walker does because he looks in the mirror and makes a decision. I have to actually build a consensus among my caucus, work with the other chamber, involve the Democrats where we are able. My job is more difficult than Governor Walker. So that's why I am going to keep working as hard as I can to be able to go out and make our case to the public. I feel like we are winning the public argument, but it doesn't mean winning the argument carries the day.
JR, I found that a very interesting quote for a number of reasons. First of all,
which one?
Okay, let's break it down. Speaker Voss said at that time, and it was before the higher revenue estimates, mm-hmm. and before we'll get to those other two issues, but in a moment of candor, he said, look, at the moment, well, first he said, probably not raise the gas tax. Then he said, it's kind of like me playing cards with the governor. I've got a pair. The governor has a straight. I need to draw three of a kind. Don't bet on me. I looked it up, JR. The odds of drawing three of a kind in poker, 46-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, are you surprised that at that moment Wednesday, Speaker Voss said probably not to a gas tax increase?
Well, what's interesting is in looking at some of the coverage, it was like, oh, Voss is backing off of a gas tax hike. And I don't think that was really what he was doing. And talking to some people this week, they said he's used this language before in other settings. He's more like being a realist and saying, look, this is the situation I'm facing right now. Because he also couples that, though, with saying, I won't support a budget unless it funds 94 North-South, which just happens to be in my district.
That's a marker. And the WISDOT budget didn't fund those improvements to 94. Excuse me.
So Voss is being honest about, look, we've got the Senate, which is right now on board with the governor's position, and Governor Walker, the most powerful veto pen in the country. So I'm not in the best spot right now, but there's still hope. That was kind of more what we took away from, and others took away from what he said.
Well, but are you surprised that he's got a tougher job than the governor? I have a more difficult job. My job is more difficult than Governor Walker.
That was an interesting comment. I would say that the impression I've gotten for months now has been that the relationship between the two of those men are a little bit strained at times. And so they, even though they're on the same page on some things, there's a little bit of a tension there. And that's kind of a reflection of a Robin Voss comment that shows that tension, you know, kind of thing. But where do they end up? That's the kind of question. What does the new revenue mean for transportation? Does anything end up there?
Right.
And what do they do next?
Okay. Well, okay, let's talk about that new revenue. So a few hours after Voss appears at a WisPolitics event, the Fiscal Bureau comes out with revised revenue estimates. Tax collections through mid-2019 will be $454.6 million higher. Individual income tax collections will average annually 4%. Sales tax uppers of average 3.2%. Spending will be $226 million less in the budget, in the current budget. Mm-hmm. Overall, three-year flow, end of 2017 through 19, upper of about $714 million. So it's suddenly raising money. Here's my question. Does this make the next budget a lot easier, or once you get these higher budget estimates, does everybody then come in and say, I want a bigger piece of it?
Well, on the one hand, it creates space for Governor Walker to fund his priorities, to up his priorities. He's talking about funding for public K-12 education, right? Number one. Number two, UW's talked about doing money tied to some kind of performance standards. Do that. He wants to do a tuition cut funded by state dollars. So what's that going to look like? So there's room now to do that. Now, go back and look in November what the Walker administration had expected.
Yes.
If you add up all the agency requests for new spending, it outstripped the expected revenues by $693 million. This would take care of everything and have money left over. I will bet you $713 million that I don't have that Walker will not take every agency budget at face value and just put it in his budget and go. Yep. He will move some things around and redirect money. What I'm wondering is how much of that $713 million is left over after he funds K-12, after he funds UW, if he does a tuition cut, and where does it go? Is it a one-time tax cut? Is it a one-time infusion of cash toward, I don't know, maybe finishing the north leg of the zoo interchange? Maybe put money into transportation? A one-time thing? Because remember, this may not be ongoing money. That's the whole question. Can you count this money in the future? If you can't, you got to spend it wisely, because if you make a commitment that's ongoing, you then have a structural deficit in future budgets, which is basically saying we're committed to X spending already before we even open the books on that next budget. They don't want to do that.
Okay, but let's talk about some of the Democratic response. Representative Subeck, Representative Hintz. They said a week ago, look, this from the State of the State message, we have a $700 million deficit. Well, that's this artificial deficit between tax collections and what agencies asked for. Mm-hmm. And Hintz yesterday said, oh, these revenue estimates are overly optimistic. So they suddenly, the Democrats, had to back up a little bit, don't they?
It kind of hurts one of their talking points about the Republican management of the budget. Now, Hintz also has been talking about, if you look at the current biennium, it goes through June 30th, he does have a point that revenues are actually down a little bit in this budget compared to what we expected they would be just a few months ago. But the Walker administration has levers they can pull on spending. And B, the Medicaid fund is doing all right. I mean, Medicaid is never good. Let's be honest, okay? It's always an issue because it is an ongoing obligation. But there are fewer people using it. The reimbursement
Federal reimbursement.
You add all these things together, and right now they're seeing a decent chunk of change going to be lapsed back to the general fund once this budget ends. So that'll hold together for four more months to make sure that happens. But that's a good sign. If that continues, that's also a good sign for this next budget. The questions are, one, will it continue? Two, will President Trump, who I think as of right now is President Trump.
He is president.
Will he go to block grants for Medicaid? Will he allow states more freedom to do things?
The governor wrote President Trump saying, we support block grants for Medicaid. Excuse me.
So there are all these things, but what will the feds do, and can they get it done the next 3 to 4 months? That then sends a signal to us, okay, we can do X before that budget is supposed to be done June 30th. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one again this year. But we'll see.
Okay, so when Speaker Voss said probably not raise a gas tax, then Fiscal Bureau comes out with these revised estimates. Mm-hmm. Then at 4 o'clock yesterday, Speaker Voss announces that Assembly Republicans wanted, let's make a deal. Mm-hmm. They said, how about this, Governor Walker and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald? How about if we have $300 million worth of transportation fund revenues, uppers, and $300 million worth of tax cuts? It's a net wash. It's neutral. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by that. Were you surprised by that?
Well, on the one hand, the new revenue numbers gave Rob and Voss and Senator Hoyes room to do this.
An opening.
But here's the caveat. There are a couple of them. One, there are no details. They said $300 million in tax cuts, but what taxes? We don't know. Dale Kayenga, a member of the Finance Committee, said he's
working on
a plan.
His own tax reform package.
He's working on a package that does the taxes and the transportation stuff. He hopes to have it 60 to 90 days. That would be right in the middle of when joint finance is really kind of getting to work on the budget. Two, they talked about having savings from Department of Transportation through reforms, quote unquote.
With an audit coming out.
Other savings.
Someday.
All right. The other caveat, so we have a framework, we have no details, right? The other caveat is, what if Governor Walker was bluffing this whole time about, I'll sign your gas tax hike if you find an offsetting tax cut? Remember in his State of the State address last week, what did he say? We can do all this and more transportation without raising taxes. Is he moving the goal line? Now, I haven't had a chance to ask him that yet. He was out in D.C. this week with the inauguration. But do you think Governor Walker really wants to sign any kind of a tax hike no matter what? I'm wondering that question now. When people have talked to you, have brought that up. Will he go back on this pledge? You know, because you're talking about if he does do it, it's a tax shift. You know, is that really in line with what Walker's thinking? So it's going to be kind of some intrigue right now. how's this going to play out? Even if some Republicans put forward a budget, their version of the budget, let's say in June, that does this, can they get the Senate on board? Can they get Walker to sign it? I'm kind of curious about that right now.
Well, I want to stick with this because, number one, $300 million is really close to what you get if you repeal the personal property tax, which a lot of business types, especially small businesses, say let's repeal. So let's just throw that out there.
That is a tax shift, though, because if you repeal that tax, and this is one of Walker's things, if you repeal that tax, then homeowners like us pick up that $300 million.
Yes.
He brags constantly about the average homeowner, how his or her property bill has gone down since he took office. My bill would go up if you repeal the personal property tax. So would yours. I mean, I'm not sure how much. It'd be spread over 5 point some million people and how many are homeowners. But it would go up. So that would be a thing that Walker would not like. So what do you do then?
You just wrote probably your property tax check. Did it go down?
mine did not, no. So up a little bit.
Mine didn't either. Now let's explore where you get $300 million. Mm-hmm. If you raise our 30.9 cent gas tax 5 cents, you get $167 million. If you raise the $75 that you and I pay to register our vehicles, you get $33 million. That only gets you to 200 of the 300. Mm-hmm. Heavy truck registration fees have not been increased since 2008. They pay heavy trucks registration fees $113 million. And trucks registered in other states using our highways pay $91.5 million. That's $205 million that could potentially be a source of closing this $300 million. So, $167, 5-cent bump in the gas tax, $33 million, $10 bump in the registration fees, maybe raise the registration fees on heavy trucks. Where do you think we get the rest of the money?
Don't forget hybrids and electric vehicles. Republicans have talked about this before, that they aren't paying the gas tax even though they're using the roads the way you and I do. So I don't have a hybrid. So if they're skipping on the gas tax, maybe they should pay a higher registration fee, some kind of miles driven tax. So watch for something like that. We don't know what the mix is going to be right now and how high will it go in the gas tax. The arguments you hear, though, are the registration fee is regressive because no matter what your car is worth or how much you make, you pay the same registration fee. The gas tax hits tourists. Yep. Those guys come from up in Illinois, go up north, Door yep. County and up to Eagle River. They're paying that gas tax as well as others. So which do you want to use? The gas tax gets more people, especially non-residents. Registration fee is, like I said, that. So I'm not sure the mix is going to be, but they could get creative and do some things. But I don't know. I'm not sure where they're going to go with
well,
this.
Well, at your event, the Was Politics event, Voss also said that his number one choice is tolling. But also, we're 3 or 4 years away from that. But that last study said that's a potential source of some big bucks if we could ever implement it.
And then with tolling, you get into who's going to pay, how is it going to work, building the infrastructure, where are you going to put them. I'm sure those drivers in Kenosha who drive to the northern suburbs of Chicago for work every day are not going to be happy paying an extra toll if they hit by Illinois when they cross state line back to go home.
Right.
So all that, where does it go? That's going to be an interesting question if they can get there, and I'm not sure right now they have the support to do it.
I see. I agree. New topic. When you reported that the governor had paid off his presidential campaign debt, it got me thinking, how much had committees for Governor Walker raised from 2009 to 2016? So I called up the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and I said, run those totals. Are you surprised, JR? 2009 to 2016, $100 million?
No, not at all.
I am. That's $12.5 million a year.
I think he had $70 million between his 14 reelect and the recall election alone. Remember the recall election? That's the one that sticks out to me.
37.3
set the foundation for Walker as a fundraiser because that gave him a national network because he was under attack. Right? It was a conservative cause. We're talking in 11. They just had the GOP wave. There wasn't like a national election going on. It gave him a fundraising base to do what he's doing right now. That also was uncapped donations. So you look at the compressed window he raised it in, too. That's what makes it amazing, you know, that kind of money. But he now has the best donor list in Wisconsin, hands down, bar none. Look at his presidential campaign. He paid off most of that money, that debt that he still had, by renting his list of donors. Because other people like John Kasich, Ted Cruz go, that's a valuable list to have because you're reaching people who will give $25 at a time, $50 at a time. You know, and Walker's people have told me in the past years that, yes, they spent a lot of money to raise money in his campaign because they're finding these donors, getting them on a list, you hit them up. But once you get them on the list and you hit them up time and time again, they'll give that $25 and $50 regularly, and it adds up. Those small donations are huge for Walker and how he raises money.
Well, you're not surprised at the $100 million, because I really am.
No, not between those two elections. That gets you to 70 right there.
Well, that's true. Okay, but then, so then I got more curious. So the governor's campaign committees, 2009, 2016, have raised $100 million. So then I said to the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, how much have third-party groups raised to support the governor through 2010 through 2016? And they broke it down, $9.9 million his first election for governor, $23 million for the recall, $12.7 million for the 24 reelect, $45.6 million. Are you surprised by that number?
Honestly, I'm not sure what numbers, how good those numbers are.
Okay.
Because of all the dark money we don't know about. I mean, the mailers that we never really see, some of the issue ads, there's a lot of stuff that goes on the radar that we just don't know about. So I'd be surprised if that number is actually higher than what they tallied.
Oh, I agree. The Democracy Campaign says this is at least the total. Okay, now let's bring them together. 2009 to 2016, $145 million.
Yeah.
One governor, 49-year-old governor.
Three elections, so break it down. So you're averaging $50 million an election for governor anymore. I remember when I first got here, and Tommy Thompson was like the king of fundraising.
He started nonstop 24/7. Excuse me.
But it's a drive. But then Jim Dole came along. Then we were seeing like $1 million every 6 months. That was like, wow, that's real money, you know, that he's raising, even in off years. Now we're seeing like Walker. If you look back, he ended 2016 with $59,000 in his state account, right?
That's important.
Yes.
So all this money raised, $100 million, but he ended 2016 in his state account with $59,000?
In part because he's trying to pay off the federal debt, right? I mean,
yeah.
Look at 2016, they were contested. There was a Supreme Court race in the spring. There were presidential primaries going on. You go through the summer with a contested U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin, a presidential race, sucking up money. If congressional district, I mean, there's a lot of demands on cash last year, right? So Walker was fixated on paying off that presidential debt to clear that off his decks. If he does run for governor again, which you expect he will at this point,
yes,
you got to get that out of the way.
Okay.
So $59K, he wasn't really raising money a whole lot for that account. But in a memo that his campaign put out last Friday, kind of to announce these numbers and how he'd met his pledge to pay off his presidential campaign debt, Joe Fadness, his political director, pointed out that he raised $34 million between January of 13 and November of 14, sending a message of we've got the machine in place to do that again, and they should know that if they come after you, we can do it again. So I expect that he will match, you know, 2014 and then some if he runs in 2018.
Okay. To be fair to the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, since I had him run these numbers, I asked Matt Rothschild for his reaction to that. And Matt said the governor is, quote, in hoc to conservative billionaires. These are the people he serves, not the citizens of Wisconsin. So then I went to the Wisconsin Republican Party and showed him these numbers. And Alex Zimmerman said his reforms speak for themselves. More Wisconsinites are working than ever before. Our unemployment is the lowest it's been since 2001. Taxes have been cut $4.7 billion. But JR, just to stay on this for a little bit more, when you are able as a governor to raise $100 million over 8 years, what does it say about, let's assume he runs again, what does it tell a Democratic candidate in 2018 against him?
Oh, they know they're going to get outraised. I mean, they almost assume that anymore. Democrats, you talk to them because of the hit that unions took via Act 10, the public, even the private sector unions a little bit, you know, down, that they know they're going to be outspent. So how can you raise money wisely and spend it wisely to know you're going to be, you know, beat at the in that regard by Governor Walker?
Yeah. Okay. Also breaking this week, a curious announcement by the UW Board of Regents. They're suing the former chancellor, who was 14 years there as chancellor, and the former Oshkosh chief budget officer and kind of second in command for signing contracts that would put $11 million to back real estate deals done by the University of Oshkosh Foundation. Now, nobody is alleging that these two people at this point profited personally, but they broke the rules and the laws. And so the issue is, as the UW fights for money, is this going to hurt them?
Robin Voss at our luncheon said he wanted to wait for more before he kind of weighed in. Steve Noss, state senator from Whitewater, frequent UW critic, said this is a sign they need more oversight of what's going on at the university system in general.
Right.
I would anticipate seeing some kind of push for maybe an audit of some kind or something like that. Just don't know yet like how deep this is going to go or how much it's going to sting. And what's interesting is this is all coming as Governor Walker is saying, yeah, I'm going to put more money in UW. Yes, I mean, they finally are at a point where like, okay, we got through like this tuition freeze. He says he's going to fund the cut. We'll see how that looks. He's open to like our request for more money. He's going to tie it to performance standards. So we're kind of like maybe turning a corner after being cut $250 million in this budget. And now this comes up. And how do lawmakers react? We'll see how that plays out.
Well, let's read the Nass quote. This incident, the filing of the civil suit, and that's important, civil, not criminal, shows how woefully inadequate the financial oversight has been within the UW system with the all-funds budget of $6 billion a year. Will we have the courage to reform the UW system in the 2017-2019 biennial budget? Is Nass speaking for other conservatives in his caucus like Senator Strobel and Vukmir and Kapingen?
Good question. Senator Nass is often out front of others in terms of criticizing UW, so I don't know how deep that sentiment goes right now. We'll have to wait and see.
I want to circle back once more to the WisPolitik luncheon with Speaker Voss, because he said instead of cutting tuition, he'd prefer to use this in financial aids to all students. Is he drawing another marker with Governor Walker?
Yeah, and there's an interesting debate about that, because I've seen tweets like, for example, I think Dewey Strobel this week was saying if you when you put more money into financial aid, it creates a gap for universities to raise tuition then. That there's, you know, a cycle that goes on there. So how's that going to play out? We know Walker's going to fund his cut or do a cut.
Right.
So, but I don't know, once that's put in place, what does Robin Voss and the Assembly do to try and take that out, rework it? Is that, how's it going to work politically? It's going to be interesting to watch.
It is.
That dance.
Okay, time for your stock picks, sir.
So rise to Tony Evers. So let's be honest, it's no
surprise. One of three candidates
for
DPI for re-election. The election for DPI is April 4th. Primary, I think, is
February 21st.
February 21st. And there's three candidates in a write-in? Excuse me.
No surprise at all that Tony Evers had more money on hand, raised more than his challengers. But what I'm watching are three things. Do school choice groups get involved? Does the Republican Party of Wisconsin fire up the turnout machine to help the challenger? And what does WEAC get through the NEA to help out Tony Evers? And why I say it is this. This race has kind of been like, I don't know, not a real race for a long time, right? It's always been whoever WEAC endorsed, put money behind, would win. Well, things have changed a little bit in Wisconsin where the unions aren't as powerful as they used to be. They can't like just deliver this office with their resources and their people turning out. So will the Republicans and the choice folks get that excited about it and spend the money and time? I mean, look, think about it. DPI superintendent implements policy for education, right? But the governor and the legislature, they draw up the policy. They control the purse strings. Is it worth it? Then you go look at who's running. Mr. Humphreys is trying to portray himself as the more
former
professional.
Former Dodgeville superintendent, and now he's a consultant.
Administrator, but not a superintendent. But he then signed a consultant contract with the district that pays him money to like do his job, essentially, but not full-time. He had this weird opening where he said, I signed the recall petition against Governor Walker, but now I think Act 10 is working. There's a story this week where he had his teeth whitened for $300, and it was an in-kind contribution
for
his dentist.
And now he's agreed to pay it back.
So he's building a more professional campaign, but he's had these kind of like little missteps along the way. Lowell Holtz doesn't have any money to speak of.
Beloit.
But is kind of portrayed as more like the guy who's got more superintendent, like three districts, I think it was. So what I'm watching is, I get the impression that the choice groups are going to wait to see how this primary plays out. And if somebody viable emerges, they'll evaluate, can we win this race? And if they can, they'll pump money into it. Then it's going to become, like I said, a war between that and WEAC with backing from the NEA, I think, to help Tony Evers. So that's going to be fascinating to watch. I'm just not sure if Republicans, for example, say, you know what, it's worth it. Let's get the machine going and turn out people for this race. Because there's this debate when I talk to people about if Annette Ziegler had been on the ballot this spring, the Republicans definitely would have tried to help her out. Now that she's not there, there's less incentive to do it. But at the same time, this race won't get lost because of the Supreme Court race. So maybe it's kind of a horse apiece.
Quick follow-up question. Why, when Mr. Humphreys announced, was over his left shoulder Representative, he was in a candidate, former Democratic Representative Jason Fields of Milwaukee?
He wanted to portray himself as having bipartisan support, so he had Jason Fields and Jeremy Thiesfeldt, Republican from Fond du Lac, were both on both sides of him. There's co-chairs. The other interesting thing, Luther Olson, state senator this week, said, I'm not sure we need a change. He's backing Tony Evers. So it's an interesting race so far, but question is, who's going to turn out in April?
I agree.
There's no big mayoral race, no big county executive race. I mean, this is the only thing drive turnout statewide. It's going to be fascinating to see who comes to the polls in April.
Good call. Mixed.
So David Prosser was restored this week.
He retired. He's no longer active.
But he had debt from 2011 hanging over his head.
Right, okay.
Go back. I wrote a story this past summer. Right before Prosser announced he's going to retire, the state GOP gave him $25,000 in in-kind contribution. Basically is, we're going to help you with these services. Mm-hmm. That's so it's in-kind, not real money, or an actual cash contract. Say, so we're going to help you pay off your debt, all right? Because Prosser, remember, in 2011 had a recount after his win.
Yes.
Then he had these ethics charges filed against him because of this incident with Ann Walsh Bradley that never went to anywhere because of
never resolved before he retired.
But after it was all said and done, he had $46,000 in debt hanging over his head. So the state GOP is going to help him out. And then we saw the reports this week. He paid off the rest of the debt, but he did it. The $38,000 check from
the realtors.
And $5,000 from RPW, Republican Party of Wisconsin. So it makes some people a little bit I'm not sure how I feel about this because he got a big giant check from the realtors. Now, the realtors told me there's no, this wasn't a big deal. There's nothing unseemly here. We've had a relationship with David Prosser, goes back to his days in the assembly when he was a speaker. So we were asked, and we gave the money. We thought it was a good thing to do. Dems, though, are going, well, wait a second. This guy also supported the recusal rules that WMC and the realtors basically submitted to the court.
Right.
This is kind of makes us uneasy a little bit. But for Prosser, the debt is gone. It's not hanging over his head anymore. He can enjoy retirement. He's got the law library named after him. He is out of the Supreme Court and doesn't have that headache anymore of all that stuff. But it's just a little bit, What do you do next time you got a Supreme Court justice who has debt hanging over his or her head?
Yes.
Can you strike a deal while they're still on pay? When you're done, we'll take care of it kind of thing. Those are the things you kind of open up with this stuff.
It does raise questions. Okay, falling.
So David Clark.
The irascible sheriff?
He has been no stranger controversy or making bombastic remarks. But this latest thing is there was a flight he took from Dallas to Milwaukee last weekend. A man says he walked onto the plane, asked, are you Sheriff Clark, who's apparently decked out in Dallas Cowboys gear? They were playing the Packers that day. He said yes. The guy shook his head and walked by. Clark called out, do you have a problem with me? And he said, no. When he got off the plane, he says, deputies were waiting for him with Clark to take him off and question him and escort him out of the airport. When he complained about this, Clark said he has a right to defend himself, and the next guy who does this might get knocked out. Now, pull back for a second and think about this. This is a law enforcement officer threatening anybody who approaches him and shakes his head, might get knocked out for doing it. There's red flag number one. Number two, it's starting to show another example of here's a guy who's not playing to his Wisconsin-based constituents, but to a national audience. Sheriff Clark has been a big surrogate for Donald Trump. He's got a huge following thanks to Fox News. And there's an audience that validates this behavior and eats it up. I mean, look, there's a draft Clark movement to have him run for U.S. Senate 2018. Now, I've talked to people who know him and followed him and think that's not going to happen. Sheriff Clark is not a man of debate in the Senate, but a man who wants to do action, be a law enforcement guy. So they kind of doubt that'll happen. But where is he going to go? We all think the Trump administration is a place he might land, and that would make some sense. But if he does, he's got these side gigs, where he goes on Fox News and he does these books. How's that going to be impacted by if he's in the federal government? What's his next step? Politically in Wisconsin, his window is dwindling. I mean, he's had tough races before for re-election, but you add up all the comments.
Yes.
Here's a guy who runs as a Democrat, and last night in a speech to a Donald Trump, kind of deplorables ball, I think it was, and posted to Facebook himself on his Twitter feed, the only time I'll reach across the aisle for Democrats is to grab him by the throat and remind him that Donald Trump won. So it's kind of like he's become a caricature in some ways. Republicans, Democrats, said this guy's become a caricature of himself, and it's just hard to take sometimes.
Is he too radioactive to be hired by the Trump administration? We're almost out of time.
That's a good question. But what is too radioactive for Donald Trump? Let's be honest.
That's very true. Who from Wisconsin that we know of is in Washington right now for...
All kinds of people. The governor, Leah Vukmir. I've seen tweets from a number of Republicans out there. Sheriff Clark is out there, so a good showing.
It is. Okay, I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.